Grey's Anatomy, the most iconic binge-worthy drama, is back, along with answers to the biggest cliffhangers. Will Teddy survive? Will Joe and Link finally find happiness together? Meredith returns along with fan faves like Arizona. You can now stream every episode of Grey's ever on Hulu and new episodes next day. Watch new episodes of Grey's Anatomy Thursdays at 9, 8 central on ABC and stream on Hulu.
Does Monday at the office feel like a storm? Not with Microsoft Copilot. That feeling when Copilot gets everyone up to speed instantly? It's sunny again. When Copilot simplifies complex data so your teams can act, that sun's shining on a beach. And when Copilot uncovers hidden insights, you're on that beach with your people and you find buried treasure. That's Microsoft Copilot. Learn more at Microsoft.com/AI for all.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here, like the guy with the deep voice says. Brett Baer is standing by. We also have Rich Lowry at the bottom of the hour. Exciting day. We've got a lot of things to cover. The Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, will be meeting with the Saudi Crown Prince. MBS in Saudi Arabia. We'll find out what that's about. Evidently simmering beneath all the unrest in Gaza is a possible normalization of relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia. We'll see where that stands or if they have any idea about this, any version of a two-state solution. We'll see what happens with that. Also, we do have the beginnings of the latest chapter and possibly the most explosive chapter in the Hunter Biden investigation as Tony Bobulinski comes back to front and center, primetime, as well as Lev Parnas, who is on the other side of this, who is partners with Rudy Giuliani in Ukraine, trying to find out what Hunter Biden was up to and ended up going to jail. Now he wants to testify about the reality as he knows it. It will be explosive. We'll cover it all. But first, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
The damage to our reputation and our credibility, the United States credibility around the world, that damage will last for generations.
How can you argue with Michael McCaul when he talks about the exit from Afghanistan? The hearing reveals the State Department is to blame and the Pentagon and its leaders didn't have the courage to speak up before the military operation blew up. I'll bring you the highlights and the lowlights.
Number two.
You would think that they were talking about their own immigration and border policies because that is what has sowed chaos and confusion in this country. Texas is trying to do is actually working. They're controlling a portion of their border. The only people sowing chaos and confusion is this administration.
Sheriff Mark Lamb, the border confusion as Texas gets whiplash from the courts and the price we're all paying because of the president's man-made crisis.
Number one.
And this is a rigged trial. This was a rigged trial by a crooked judge and a crooked attorney general. And we're fighting it out with them. We have a lot of cash and we have a great company, but they want to take it away.
Yep, clock ticking as the president scrambles to secure a $450 million bond as he waits his appeal on this civil trial in New York City. Why some are saying he should pull a Seinfeld and do nothing, really. We'll discuss everything that he could possibly do, as well as the Georgia case. And let's bring in Brett Baer, chief political anchor with Fox News, anchor special report coming up tonight at 6 o'clock. Hey, Brett.
Hey, morning.
All right, so Brett, we're ready to focus in on Hunter again. Tony Bobulinski is probably their best witness. He did work with the guy. He met personally with President Biden, had the text messages that warned, don't ever bring up Joe Biden's name. I'm just paranoid. I have a reason to be. All these things he's going to bring forward today. I heard it was explosive behind the scenes. Do you think it's going to be one of those moments we remember today afterwards?
I think so. You know, I think a lot of people have discounted for some reason Tony Bobulinski, and yet every time he's testified under oath. He's kind of laid things out pretty specifically, and there's not a lot of, you know, discounting of his storyline.
I know.
And the crazy part is that it hasn't really gotten traction across the board. But here he is under oath every time telling pretty much the same story. So I think today publicly, it may be the first time that some people hear it. I doubt it's going to get a ton of coverage on other networks, but I've been boggled by the fact that Tony Bobulinski's story has not been more, relevant.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things. I've been in contact with people that know him, and he is so pumped up for this because he was caught by surprise that it didn't resonate when he originally spoke before the debate. He couldn't believe how few people picked up on it outside Fox, and I think you feel the same way. One of the weird storylines, some that died and some that didn't resonate during the 2020 election. Pandemic was also simmering underneath. And now, little by little, as the story comes together, we also have another testimony coming from a prison cell, another business partner. Devin Archer will eventually be in prison, we understand. He will not come today. Hunter Biden will not come today. But you're going to have people saying, yeah, I dealt with Hunter, and I assume he's going to say, and Joe knew all about it and was a beneficiary of it. That's going to be direct. And I think in Bobulinski's case, he cannot wait for Democrats to question him. In fact, one of his interviews, he said, Jake Tapper, call me. Why is Fox the only one that calls me? So I don't remember anything quite like this.
I don't either. And we'll see how, Democrats treat it. I'm sure it's going to be, attacking or discounting, but it's tough to go down the road of facts and text messages and just be totally dismissive.
So this civil trial is fascinating with the president of the United States. He was guilty before he got there. It was just a matter of how much of a fine he'll pay. And he ends up getting a $450 million bond that he has to post. It turns out, Brett, I don't walk in these worlds, but there's no bond company that would do it. And there's almost never would be, whether it was Trump or somebody else. They say you need $1 billion in cash in order to get a bond of $454 million. Really? And that the fact that you have assets worth more than that don't matter because they don't care about real estate. Wow. And then you have bond companies who don't want to be the one to help out Trump if they want to do business in New York because of the bad blood Trump brings up with Letitia James, who's clearly spiteful and political. So because of that, Trump has got very few options, one of which he's going to find out in a few days. If he can get the $400 million down to maybe $100 million, he thinks maybe Chubb or somebody else can give him that bond. The other thing I heard was he's thinking about doing nothing and just waiting for appeal and letting the image take place of Letitia James walking into Trump Tower and saying, that's mine. Because this is not a political winner, in my humble opinion, for Democrats.
I agree with you. And the fact that Letitia James, who, obviously campaigned on getting Trump, would be seen taking Trump Tower potentially, or another property, I agree with you. It's not the image. I mean, if there is a sense of fairness, a lot of people, even independents, would look at that and say, wait a second, what's going on here? He's going to appeal, but he needs to put up all this money. Fine. But, I think I agree with you. The political side of this is not great for Democrats. However, the former president, is in a bind.
Yeah.
And he's either going to have to fire sale some of these properties, or he's going to have to, watch as she takes control of them.
So, in the morning, we try to get the best sound bites because we're a news talk show. And I usually go to Brett Baer, one-stop shopping, special report, go to that panel, find out what happens. But today, I'm led to Gutfeld, where Kevin O'Leary is really going to help us out now when he rarely gives me news, although he gives me entertainment. Here's Kevin O'Leary last night, cut 9.
Yeah, this law was actually used decades ago to stop people from overcharging for refrigerators.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been applied here in a unique way. I've weighed into this narrative this week with a fair amount of friction, but from a completely different perspective. Forget about Trump. Doesn't matter. Forget about the AG. She doesn't matter. These people will be gone in 4 to 8 years. What remains is this case, mm-hmm. this law. And so think about America. Why is it the number one economy on Earth? Because it attracts capital from everywhere else. Mm-hmm. The safest place to deploy money, if you have trillions of it in sovereign wealth, is the United States of America. Mm-hmm. Why? We have courts. We protect property rights. The courts here give you an appellate opportunity. You always get to appeal if you think you were done harm. Mm-hmm. This isn't happening here.
No.
This is harming the American brand. And the whole world is watching it. And I'm just putting up my hand saying, why is this good for us?
So it's not good for New York, but it's also not good for America. And Kevin O'Leary is apolitical. He cares about money.
Yeah, that's true. And this is a guy who, you know, moved his stuff out to South Dakota, I guess. And, you know, I think that you look at states that make business attractive, you know, to go there and to stay there. New York with taxes is one thing, but with this judgment is another. And it clearly sends a signal that is beyond politics.
So lastly, Ashley Merchant joins us on Fox and Friends today. And the one thing, there's many things that will emerge when she was able to find out that Nathan Wade and Fannie Willis were in a relationship and money was involved in vacations and cash, and we saw it all play out. Now the Nathan Wade is gone, and Ashley and Fannie Willis is still being pressed, and she might be KO'd, and she might lose an election. But the one thing that I think emerged that is the most important, when Donald Trump came forward and said, Joe Biden's going after me, they keep saying there's no proof. There's no proof. This is just the Justice Department acting independently. So I asked her about this. Cut six.
Oh, there's definitely a link. I mean, a lot of the billing records show that, you know, Nathan Wade was reimbursed for trips to Washington, D.C., that he met with J6 counsel. He met in Athens. He met in Washington, D.C. I also got records from the White House showing that not only Ms. Willis went there, but other people in her staff went to the actual White House. So they, you know, they have tracking data on who enters the White House, how long they're there. I was able to find all of that information. So there was quite a bit of information linking this back to D.C.
It's going to be hard to for Rachel Maddow to interrupt a Donald Trump speech when he says he goes back to Joe Biden and say that's inaccurate.
Yeah. I mean, you've got receipts. So I think, listen, that is one of the things the former president has, is that when he talks about these cases being like planes coming in at Dulles, they are orchestrated by air traffic control from D.C. That's his argument. And this is a case that seems like there is a direct connection. I think there are other cases that are more problematic for the former president. And the question is whether they're going to actually hit trial before the election. It seems less and less likely now as they continue to get pushed back. But the January 6th and the documents case, you know, present some real challenges for him.
Who's on your show tonight?
Tonight we've got Senator Ted Cruz and Senator Tim Kaine. Together, working together on common ground on a bill about fentanyl and tranq and drugs, and we're going to ask them about other things as well. But those are two big figures, you know, in the Senate that are working together across party lines.
If you could do one other thing that's in your interest, can you tell me what is going on with the PGA and the LIV Tour? First, it was this explosive merger. The PGA president goes in the hospital. And now we just hear these two groups are existing together, but nobody knows who's doing what and where points count towards, towards the number one ranking. What's going on? What is going on with the merger, the game you love?
Yeah, it's really in secret. There's no details about what's happening. I think LIV wants a couple of events in the fall, team events, and they want to be able to have their players get world ranking so that they can add up to the majors. And I don't think they've worked that out yet. So it's kind of still in limbo. And listen, you have to say to the LIV guys, they took the money. Now this merger is announced, but it's still not complete. But yet these LIV guys continue to perform in major championships. And we've got the Masters coming up in a couple weeks, so we'll see.
So that's when the world comes together. But besides that, the other events like the Players' Championship and others, you're not going to see the LIV players, right?
That's right, yeah, because it's a PGA event. The majors, Masters, U.S. Open, British Open, PGA Championship, you won't see it, but the others you will.
All right, Brett, I think we covered the gamut. I feel fulfilled. Did I help your day get off to a good start?
100%. And sometime you're going to come on the panel and really enlighten us with your radio wisdom.
Well, my problem is I overwhelm the others and creates resentment in the green room. of my personality and my knowledge. And it's, I just,
I've seen that.
You've seen it? Right. You don't want to bring it up because you're not a controversial guy. Brett, thanks so much. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
All right. Brett Baer, when we come back, we open up the phones. And then Rich Lowry will break down this new push by Joe Biden. It's very interesting. He flat out was going after the Hispanic vote, which he admits he's losing. What he said, I find fascinating in a very simplistic way. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
Shipping can make or break a sale, so optimize how you ship your orders with ShipStation. They make it easy to automate and manage orders no matter how big your business grows. And they might even be able to help reduce shipping and warehouse costs. So optimize and keep up your momentum for growth with ShipStation. Sign up for your free 60-day trial now at ShipStation.com and use the code POD. That's ShipStation.com with the code POD.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It remains my opinion that if there is culpability in this attack, it lies in policy decisions that created the environment of August 2021 in Kabul. Culpability and responsibility do not lie with the troops on the ground who perform magnificently. It does not lie with the platoon, company, or battalion commanders or the flag officers who oversaw operations on the ground in Kabul.
So that was General McKenzie. So I was asked yesterday to do a special on Fox Nation. So going back on the train, there's a van in front of my house, which is a mini studio. So I listened to as much as possible. And let me just give you an idea of the theme. Number one, only five Democrats showed up. They said this is all political. If we were doing something non-political, it would have been about the 20 years in Afghanistan. No, the way we left is the story. You know, we had movies about how we got in, the horse soldiers, the killing of bin Laden. Got it. That's a different section. I'm into that, too. I love to say the last 20 years. But it was, number one, the Doha Agreement. You had every Democrat just say, this is what Donald Trump would have done. Donald Trump wanted to be done May 1st. Okay? That this is, nobody would have predicted that this is the way it's going to end. General said, no, we told them. But there's no State Department there to defend themselves or to give their side of the story. So it was only military people now retired speaking up. And I appreciate them showing up. So the Doha Agreement that was just between the Taliban and Ambassador Khalilzad, the American side, big mistake. You always should have had, and if you tell me that they wouldn't have come to the table with the sitting government, so don't come to the table. If you explain to the American people that we need Bagram because Iran, Russia, and China are our surrounding areas, and it's so abundantly obvious that these are our enemies, and it's to our advantage to be there. And then we find out from Mark Milley that all we need is 2,000 people. It looked like NATO has pledged up there at 20. They would have pledged another 2,000 contractors, and we hold the area. And you explain to everybody why it's necessary to hold and why this money is worth it and why you're giving people a chance to have an opportunity at somewhat of a decent life if you are a woman and not a terrorist fundamentalist. But now we have a terror haven, not in our interest. Now we have a bunch of people who feel shunned, not in our interest. And we left a ton of people behind. Mark Milley, cut 20.
My analysis, based on my assessment and the recommendations of the commanders, to include General McKenzie, and the consensus of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, was that we needed to maintain a minimum force of 2,500 troops on the ground, mostly special forces, with allied troops and contractors, in order to sustain the Afghan National Security Forces and its government until the diplomatic conditions of the Doha Agreement were met. Without this support, it was my view at the time that it was only a matter of when, not if, the Afghan government would collapse and the Taliban would take control.
He said that. They ignored that. Joe Biden told George Stephanopoulos no one ever told him that. But he decided not to throw his stars down because he said somebody else would have to take the position. No. Mr. General, sir, if you threw your star down as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff after being looked at as a hero for standing up to Donald Trump, Joe Biden would have done this because he knows it would be political suicide.
If you're interested in it,
Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Then Letitia James seizes his property, puts liens on all of his assets, bank accounts, and as Eric said, that is not restricted to New York. So she probably at this point understands where he has different assets in Florida, Mar-a-Lago, and elsewhere.
And what does that mean? He can't go in them, or people can't go? What does that mean?
It does mean that he would not be able to. It would be fought out in some part in the courts, but for that period of time, it really becomes unusable. And how does he get any additional business going when these are under foreclosure or being seized by the court?
And that is Ryan Goodman, a legal analyst I put on CNN on purpose because everybody knows this is an overreach. Everybody knows this is abusive. Everybody knows now if you go and talk to a bond company, they just don't lend $450 million out to anyone. They don't look at, believe it or not, they don't look at people who are in real estate as someone who could use real estate as collateral. So it's impossible. And the number is astronomical. That's why it's going to probably be successful on appeal. But in the meantime, can you imagine a situation where you can sell off somebody's stuff while they wait for appeal? That's exactly what's happening. It is insane. And it's become abundantly clear. Rich Lowry, editor of Nash Review, joins us now. Rich, there's so much to talk about. But I wanted you to hear this. They're not even celebrating on many channels outside the Rachel Maddows of the world. Because this is so obviously an overreach. Can you believe we're at this place now?
Yeah, and it's profoundly wrong. They use this consumer fraud statute, not intended for this kind of case or circumstances. You know, you're selling a fraudulent product on late night TV. They'll come after you with the statute. But it's not meant to deal with sophisticated financial players. And as we've talked about repeatedly, there are no victims. There are no banks that are out there saying, oh, you know, Trump's papers were bad and therefore we lost money. No, they all made money. There are no victims. And then to layer on top this insane penalty that is just meant to squeeze him and hurt him and humiliate him. And if there's any doubt about that, Letitia James is removing it on Twitter, you know, every day when she's gloating about the amount that he owes. And it's increasing by $112,000 a day because of interest. And as you say, it's just really hard to put up this bond. So she's going to, you know, go after his bank accounts and his buildings. There are almost no words for it. It's such a disgrace.
Right. I mean, the hope is on Monday they say, okay, we'll put $100 million or whatever it is, and he'll get Chubb or somebody else to do what they did with E. Jean Carroll while they wait to appeal that case too. But it's so obvious. You know, it was interesting to me. A billionaire was in here yesterday. His name eludes me. Hey, P, would you look it up? My guest yesterday at 9:30. He might be Treasury Secretary. Yeah, Kesson, yeah. He came up and said to me, this is not like Navalny, where the president keeps saying it is like Khodorkovsky. And he goes, Khodorkovsky, if people remember, became a self-made multimillionaire. And they said, fine, keep your money as long as you don't run for president. And he decides, you know what? I'm thinking about running against Vladimir Putin. They took all his stuff and put him in jail for 10 years. He goes, that's what this is like.
Yeah, it's not worthy of America. It's something that's never happened. It's something that shouldn't happen. And it's something, it's distracting Trump. It's eating up resources. But I don't think it's going to have the effect in the general election that they think. I think people are going to be focused on the substantive records of these two men. So all this stuff when people are in the voting booth will be a detail or you know, a minor distraction. But it isn't to Trump. You know, this is a business empire he built. You know, he takes great pride on and is being destroyed by a politicized prosecution.
So you wrote about this whole thing that's not resonating according to this polls, that President Trump is a threat to democracy. So you go at him, you don't like something about his 4 years pandemic, you don't like his vaccine, you don't like the trade, the China deal, whatever it is, you don't like that he's too friendly with Vladimir Putin, okay. But the whole threat to democracy thing, they keep on pointing to that he's a threat to democracy. And you just point out step by step that you, like me, January 6th is not a good day. The prisoners are not hostages. Some are overcharged, absolutely. The obsession with January 6th is out of control. The January 6th trial was pure theater produced by a TV producer. I got it. But no, it was just bad. He handled the after-election stuff bad. But showing that he's a threat to democracy doesn't hunt. Do you want to expand on your column?
Yeah, I mean, so let's take this thought experiment seriously. How would he end democracy? I mean, there's some serious people, or some, you know, especially serious people who say this will be the end of democracy if he wins. So what would he do, right? Would he cancel the midterm elections in 2 years? Well, the president doesn't have any authority over the midterm elections. He can say they're canceled, but nothing's going to happen. He'd need Congress to cancel its own elections. Is anyone really going to do that? Majorities of both houses are going to cancel the elections? No, it's insane. And then is he going to run for a third term? Well, he in that case, he really wouldn't be on the ballot in state after state. And the Supreme Court would uphold what the states are doing because he just can't, under the 22nd Amendment, run for a third term. Will he stay in office not having run? Well, I mean, if he wanted to do that, the Constitution says you're no longer president after January 20th. So whoever was elected president would say, excuse me, you know, and the military and everyone else would obey that guy. And you know, would you really want to go out in those sort of disgraceful terms? So it's exaggerated. They need it as a political issue, obviously. But interestingly, in these polls, it's about even, you know. 30-something people think Trump's a threat to democracy, and 30-something people think Biden's a threat to democracy.
You know what it is? That attitude is a threat to democracy. Letting people think that if your guy doesn't win, the mm-hmm. country's over.
Yeah, yeah. Right,
and I
right.
wish someone would be mature enough to say that. I don't think Joe Biden would be a dictator. Trump will not be a dictator. In fact, one of the things was he was in, you point out too, Don McGahn was told to go fire the Robert Mueller, who was doing the investigation on him. He didn't do it. The New York Times gets the story. He says, call up the New York Times and say it didn't happen. And McGahn didn't do it. So the problem from the Trump supporters was he didn't have a staff loyal enough to do things that they thought were beyond the bounds of what the president should do. So you point out everything. But you also point out something else that everyone forgets, that Hillary Clinton spent 4 years saying everybody knows that Donald Trump was an illegitimate president. Everybody knows that Russia put him in there. Everybody knows from even, what's her name? Letitia James, in one of her speeches in 2018, says he's an illegitimate president. Yeah. Everybody knows it. The first time they said he won in 2016 is when he lost in 2020. That's the only time they look back at 2016 as a legitimate election.
Yep. Yeah, and they'll do it this time, too. You know, both sides have done it. I think it's wrong. I think it was wrong what Trump did after the 2020 election. But if he wins, there's going to be a riot in the streets. You know, they're all talking about bloodbath. There'll be riots in the streets if Trump wins. There's a reason that D.C. was being boarded up prior to the 2020 election. It wasn't because they thought Trump people would be rioting. They thought Trump would win, and the left would be rioting. So they'll be totally out of control. You're absolutely right. They didn't accept the election in 16. The Russia hoax investigation was a function of that or an expression of that, and all that will be times two or times three if Trump wins in November.
So the other thing is, like we said on January 6th, I'm willing to point out when I want to see Trump win. All right, I thought I have nothing against Nikki Haley. I thought she would have been a great. I think she will eventually be a great president. I think Ron DeSantis too. He's got the nomination. I want Trump to win. I'll just say that flat out. I think it's better for the country. Forget Republican or Democrat. But I'm also going to point out when he says things that aren't helpful or wrong. But when he said bloodbath at that event, which was mostly off prompter, just working the crowd, which shows he has not lost his fastball, which everyone wants to say he did. He came out and had that phrase. He used bloodbath. He clearly was talking about the China's going to flood our markets with these new Chinese vehicles. And he says, if we allow this to happen, it'll be a bloodbath, be 100%. It'll be 100% tariffs. That's what he would put on if he wins. Got it. So everyone's saying bloodbath. He's calling for a civil war. What's his name? Joe Scarborough cursing in the morning, saying he's calling for a civil war. How dare you cover for him? So listen to these examples of the word bloodbath being used on other networks to describe other things in America.
Republicans understand that they're headed for another potential electoral bloodbath.
Quickly, it's still not clear that Donald Trump will, in fact, testify, because they think that would be a bit of a bloodbath.
Major universities bracing for a bleak financial situation. Why one expert is predicting a bloodbath as classes resume this fall.
But as Politico.com reports tonight on the, quote, bloodbath at the RNC.
Coming out of Iowa, they were promising that this was effectively going to be a bloodbath.
If he doesn't run, there's going to be a bloodbath of the Democratic Party.
So that was every Democrat on other channels talking about bloodbath. So the average person listening to us right now doesn't need me to roll that. Which blows me away is that Democrats think they can manipulate the audience again on how Trump speaks and what he meant. We get it.
Yeah, I mean, the crazy thing is, if they want to attack that rally, there's plenty of legitimate material. You know, I thought the January 6th stuff, the hostages and all that, was bad. And he said it, and he meant it, and there's no ambiguity about it. Focus on that. But instead, they always got to go too far. They always got to lie about the guy, and they have to pretend that clearly what he meant was, you know, the U.S. auto manufacturers are going to be hurt if you let in these Chinese cars made in Mexico, and there's going to be a bloodbath. And Joe Scarborough, one of the things he said is no one ever uses bloodbath in financial terms. I'm sure on CNBC they say bloodbath all the time, you know, if a company's hurting or the market's tanking. So this is a common word. It's a common metaphor. And what they don't realize, or they just don't care, is they discredit themselves and they make it harder for themselves to make a legitimate case about Trump, which from their perspective, you know, they should be really concerned about making. But they just can't help themselves. It's like an adrenaline high or a drug addict who always needs more outrage. And here we are.
Yeah, I think it's crazy. So we'll see where all this goes. So the president of the United States is down 6 points when it comes to the Hispanic vote. And I can't believe we're saying this, Rich. If I told you this after Mitt Romney lost, when it looked like Hispanics were leaving the Republican Party forever, and everyone said, change your language when it comes to the border, Hispanics are getting misconstrued, and no one changed their language. In fact, they got tougher, and their numbers with the Hispanic community have gone up, not just Cubans, across the board. So the president of the United States basically is going out west just saying, I need you back. That's not a line. I need you back. I mean, and he's just putting down the president, saying he used the word poison our society. He says some of them are not human. Yeah, some of them aren't human. There's one of, like, for example, that killed Lakin Riley over in Georgia, the one that just raped a woman in Massachusetts. They come over here, they create havoc, and it's not anti-Hispanic. Right? In fact, one was Haitian. America has separated the two.
Yeah, and that's another thing from the rally is being totally distorted. It's being forgotten, or people aren't focusing on it because of the bloodbath stuff. But when he was talking about some illegal immigrants not being human, he was talking about MS-13 gang members jailed in other countries. And he's saying these people being released and sent here. I don't know whether that's true. But he was talking about criminals, right? The most heinous criminals you can imagine. And no one has quoted that line. You know, it's like one sentence before what they always quote. But they can't be bothered again just to provide a little of the context. And, you know, you can say, okay, even those people you shouldn't be saying this about. Right. But obviously, most people wouldn't agree with you. So again, they go with the distortion over the truth. And the Latino voter thing is truly extraordinary. And a lot of it just has to do with the class divide in American politics that is starker than it's ever been, with college-educated folks swinging to the Democrats and working-class folks swinging to Republicans. And we've seen it among white voters for quite some time now. And we're also seeing it with Latino and black voters. And I have to say, Brian, the electoral path for Trump is pretty clear. Win Georgia, which seems like it's going to happen. Win Arizona, which is, if the Latino thing is real, could happen. And then you just need to pick off one of the big blue states, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, or Michigan, and he's way ahead in Michigan.
Yeah, and Ohio seems solidified, and the Senate seems strong, a strong chance to flip it. If you look at what's going on in Montana with Sheehy, if you see how strong Justice is, he basically has got the seat already in West Virginia. And they have a strong corner, stronger candidates you can have. I think Dave McCormick, with a little bit of experience now, the military, you know, they have a problem. He doesn't live there full time all the time because he's divorced and he goes back to see his kid. I think that's a strong, strong, true story. So Casey doesn't do much. He's a low profile senator. So you have a good chance to flip the Senate, which would hold the filibuster and stop adding two more states. Because what happened is the Democrats have lost their reasonable candidates, Senator Sinema and Senator Manchin. Those two people were roadblocks to doing some horrific things and getting rid of the filibuster, which I think would be horrific for the country. Lastly, I think President Trump should do something else unorthodox. I would basically name the candidate. I would name his cabinet, a lot of them, and let them start doing some work for him, especially if he's going to end up in court. I know everything's unorthodox about this election. We're watching Barack Obama, Bill Clinton. We're watching all these surrogates fan out for President Biden because he can't. Well, Trump can only be in so many places. Name them, send them, and let them know what type of staff they're going to have and who the people will be at the helm, and let them compare the two. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, so this is an interesting idea. I think we talked about it once before, and I do think if you can get good people to commit to the top cabinet positions, that's a reassuring sign. You know, it argues against he's a madman. You know, it's all going to be chaos. Well, look, Mike Pompeo, who did a great job for 4 years at CIA and State, he's going to be at defense. You know, he's not a madman.
Radcliffe.
He's a good choice. And then also, I'm more of your view that if he's going to be tied up in courts, he needs surrogates. So you have this bizarre situation where neither candidates can be able to campaign full time. Biden, because he's just not up for it, and Trump, because he's going to be distracted by all these court cases. So maybe it does make sense to have some prospective cabinet officials out there.
Hey, look, they talked about Vivek at Homeland. They talked about Radcliffe doing maybe being AG or Secretary of Defense. They got Michael Waltz, who wants to be a part of this. Tom Cotton and Marco Rubio most likely be tapped. You got the governor of North Dakota, who is constantly with the former president, who's nothing but credible and kind and successful. I'd fan him out. Ben Carson will absolutely be involved. So I just an idea, and feel free to put in the column and claim it as your own.
Awesome. All right.
On Rich
that's,
Lowry.
That's part of the business.
You got it, Rich. Thank you so much. Back in a moment. I'll try to squeeze in some calls. Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we're back, everybody. We have a lot going on today. In the middle of the show, we're going to start getting some of the Hunter Biden testimony today, and it's going to be explosive. They got to push back with Lev Parnas. He was the former business partner of Rudy Giuliani, who went to jail because of some things that he unsavory things that he did here. Not registering as a foreign agent. Number two, he's going to say there was no illicit deal between Joe Biden and the Ukrainian government at the time when he was vice president, which is fine. You can go and have that opinion, but it's not going to compare to what we're going to get in terms of testimony from a prison, from Hunter Biden's former business partner, literally live from a prison. And then we're going to hear from Tony Bobulinski, who had meetings face-to-face with Joe Biden. He has the place and time. He's got receipts. He's got text messages. And he is awaiting, almost begging, to be attacked by Jamie Raskin and his clan. And they're going to come at him. And he can't wait because he feels he's got facts on his side. He's also got this thing called an impeccable background, and one of which he's an intelligence officer in the military. I think he rose to colonel. Number two, he's known as one of the hardest working wrestlers that ever went to Penn State. He walked on, made the team. Penn State's the best wrestling, Scary, Iowa, right now, the best wrestling school in the country. And he's got this self-made millionaire thing on his background. He didn't need the job. He was asked to help the Bidens. So if you want to know what they were or weren't up to, we're going to get that today. He said it before. I think people aren't ready to hear it. I think there was a lot of people shadow banning people like Bobulinski. They're not doing it now. And after this, we're going to hear a lot more from him. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. BrianKilmeade.com to find out more.
Top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I am pumped up to be right from Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, where so much action is taking place. And you can almost hear the big money leaving this state and this city because no one's going to be here anymore. As people know what's going on with Donald Trump, they think they're just going after Trump. They're sending a message to big business. It's not healthy. It's all about politics. You're on the wrong side. You vote the wrong way. Support the wrong guy. Go to the wrong fundraiser. They're coming for your stuff. And I think people are fed up with it. It's China-like. Michael Pillsbury is going to be with us shortly and talk about China. Author of the 100-Year Marathon, senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Today is going to be here in Capitol Hill about the buying of land in and around military installations and key places by Chinese business people masking and sometimes hiding their true origins and what we're going to do to stop it along with TikTok. We'll talk to him about that and we'll update you on what's happening with the Hunter Biden Oversight Committee hearing, because we know Tony Bobulinski and another business partner from prison will testify. Lev Parnas will testify for, I guess, Democrats who think Joe Biden is squeaky clean. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The damage to our reputation and our credibility, the United States credibility around the world, that damage will last for generations.
Chairman of the Armed Services Committee, Michael McCaul, Afghanistan hearing reveals that State Department is to blame mostly, and the Pentagon and its leaders didn't have the courage to speak up for their ridiculous ideas on ways to deplane or dismount from Afghanistan. The operation blew up, and they say they told you so. Problem is, State Department wasn't there to defend themselves. We'll tell you where we go from here.
Number two.
You would think that they were talking about their own immigration and border policies, because that is what has sowed chaos and confusion in this country. Texas is trying to do is actually working. They're controlling a portion of their border. The only people sowing chaos and confusion is this administration.
No question. Sheriff Mark Lamb, who's actually running for a congressional seat. Border confusion. Texas gets its whiplash as their courts first allow them to start arresting people that come across the border illegally, and then a court jumped in and stayed that rule, so it's going to be talked about in court. So the Supreme Court will eventually come in, but Texas wants to claim its own border security. This is historic.
Number one.
And this is a rigged trial. This was a rigged trial by a crooked judge and a crooked attorney general. And we're fighting it out with them. We have a lot of cash and we have a great company, but they want to take it away.
Yeah, they could, and they will, if they have a chance. Clock ticking on Donald Trump as he scrambles to secure a ridiculous $450 million bond while awaiting his appeal for another court case. Also, he appeals to a judge to knock it down to something that a bond company would actually lend him, and they won't use as collateral any of his assets. The guy's in real estate. He has assets. He doesn't put it in a passbook savings account. And as Mark Cuban, who is totally against Donald Trump, tells everyone, even me, even he does not have that type. Nobody has that money laying around. And we understand that you need $1 billion to get a $450 million bond. They're trying to bankrupt the guy. And what they're doing is looking like bullies and making it look like pure politics. I'm telling you. And I just go back to what we talked about yesterday. And that is, this is Donald Trump's advantage. Example of Donald Trump internationally is not Navalny, who was killed in prison because he didn't like the leadership. It is Khodorkovsky. And Khodorkovsky, I'm sure no one remembers, this guy was the richest oligarch in Russia when they had somewhat of a market economy, just a little bit, and they let him keep his money as long as he didn't run for president. When it became clear he wanted to run for president, suddenly they found him corrupt, put him on trial, and then put him in jail. For 10 to 15 years, he is now living in London, rebuilding his wealth. But Putin let everybody know, you challenge me, you go to prison, and I'll make up a charge. That's what this reminds me of. It's making Donald Trump seem like a martyr. And with the winning candidate in this election will not be the one that wins the base of their party. It'll be the one that wins independents and undecideds. And one of the big stories is going to be over the weekend. Donald Trump came out and said, look, I know what China's trying to do here. I was the first to identify it and go take them on directly, even though they were my first visitor at Mar-a-Lago. And he said, when it comes to cars, they're making massive amount of cars. They're going to overwhelm the European market. Now they're building them in Mexico, trying to take advantage of the USMCA. And if he says, if you don't make me president, they're going to flood the market here and it'll be a bloodbath, a political, a economic bloodbath. But of course, people took it the wrong way. And he also said, if it's me and I'm president, 100% tariff to stop him and let American cars compete. Michael Pillsbury joins us now. I would say one of the premier experts on China in the country, knows exactly what the president is capable of doing and how he did recognize China as more than just an economic rival. Michael, welcome back.
Thanks, Brian. I'm an eyewitness to what you just said. President Trump used to send me over to China to see what their reactions were to him, and they would say Trump is the first president to do this. And they were obviously quite scared about the idea of even 50% tariffs. This is 4 years ago, and now he's talking about going to 100% to get their attention. So I think he's President Trump really has the number of the Chinese, don't you think?
I do think so, which makes me think that they're going to do everything in their power to make sure Biden wins, which is another reason why TikTok matters so much, because we're able to shape their news feed and the videos that we all get and to let everybody know how evil Donald Trump is and how Joe Biden is steadying the ship. His gaffes won't emerge. It won't be a big headline, China wants Biden to win. But they'll shape the narrative to the 170 million users. Do you think I'm speaking out of school? Do you think what I say is unsubstantiated?
No, I think you're right. And I think we've seen it in the last 6 months or so, a total change in the Chinese attitude. In the first 2 years of the Biden administration, China was very, very tough with them. They refused to start the trade talks. They refused to let any kind of follow-up take place on whether China was abiding by President Trump's trade agreement. There are quite a long list of harsh tactics China used against the Biden administration. But as soon as the polls showed that Trump was pulling ahead, there's quite a sharp change. The Chinese told Biden, apparently, yes, you know, send your four cabinet officials to Beijing. We'd be happy to meet them. Yes, we'll be happy to come to San Francisco. And they start acting as though Biden is a great hero and a great leader for America. So I think a lot of people noticed this, the Chinese shift to wanting to make Biden look good, particularly in the eyes of the American voter. Don't you think?
I think there's an excellent chance of that. There's no question about it. They could not have been tougher on him to begin with. They also in Afghanistan, they moved in days after we left to move in and start grabbing lithium, the rare earth right out of Afghanistan. We know their economy is not recovered, no doubt about it. But we know that not only have they adapted to the electric car industry, they're about to flood the market. In Europe, they're worried. And do you think the president, the former president, has every reason to be concerned about what could happen to our car industry if we're not smart?
Yes, I do, Brian. I think President Trump's approach was way ahead of Biden. The idea of competition, the idea that we need to wake up what China's doing to our companies and to global markets. President Trump really pushed on that publicly to make people understand, including the 170 million TikTok users, get them to understand the broad strategic framework that we're in. Here's another country out to destroy our global primacy, our global leadership, trying to surpass us economically and in every other way, so that they're not a friendly power. They shouldn't be thought of in connection with panda bears. It's a quite different relationship, and Trump wanted to start calling them to account, you might say, for their 20 or 30 years. I argue in my book, 100-Year Marathon, I argue that we're already 75 years into the Chinese approach to see global dominance for themselves. And Trump saw that and started taking action on it. One thing he did that Biden has not done, Trump got the Chinese into negotiations. So they would send this guy to the White House. There was a draft text. It went back and forth for over a year and a half of tough threats on both sides. But then there was a deal. What you see with Biden is none of that. They simply are not negotiating at all. It's rather bizarre.
It is. He's not trying to do trade agreements at all. And this president wanted to redo them all from South Korea on down. He was trying to reconfigure the European relationship as well. I want you to hear what a Democrat, Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, who is co-chairing the Select Committee on China, not co-chairing, I think he's a ranking member, with Mike Gallagher. Right. This is how he described what ByteDance is and how it relates to China. Cut 42.
ByteDance is the 100% owner of TikTok. ByteDance basically has its editor-in-chief, who's also the secretary of the Chinese Communist Party cell, embedded at the highest echelons of the company to control all of its products. And he has been tasked with, quote, making sure all of its products, including TikTok, adhere to correct political direction. And so this is a different type of threat than we've seen before.
So people should understand that it's not we should not let China buy CBS. And that's it. No one has anything against. Congratulations. You made an algorithm that's really effective and better than Instagram and Facebook and Snapchat. You did it. But you can't own it. You can't own it in our country. It's a media corporation. And you can't own it. That's against our laws. Schwarzenegger can't be president. Sorry, you weren't born here. That's just the way it is.
Part of it also is that TikTok and ByteDance, even though there are threats and they should be separated and we should have the TikTok under American ownership, even though all that's true, and I'm a fan of Rajat's, whose tape you just played, but the most important thing is this is just a small part of the overall Chinese 100-year marathon strategy. They're coming at us in military affairs. They're sending their jet fighters around Taiwan every day, 10 to 15 fighters. They just have a broad-scale approach undermining America's global leadership. And so if we can't get the TikTok ban done, if Rand Paul successfully blocks it in the Senate, Brian, then it's showing the Chinese, hey, we can talk about them, but we just can't take measures to stop them and win the competition unless Donald Trump gets back in the White House.
Senator Rand Paul could stop it? How?
I was a Senate staffer for more years than I hate to remember, and the Senate has a different procedural rule than the House. In the House, you have to go through the Rules Committee. You can bring things to the floor. In the Senate, any senator can filibuster. It's the old Jimmy Stewart movie you may have seen. So if Rand Paul really feels strongly about it, that this is freedom of speech and, you know, he just can't allow it, he and at least one or two other allies can just prevent the bill from ever being brought up. That's what I'm afraid of.
Would you?
And the Chinese are watching this very carefully. They see this as a test case for whether or not the Americans can take effective action against China without having Trump in the White House. And the answer may be no, we cannot.
Why do you think Trump backed off?
There's been a Washington Post speculation, which is a kind of demonization, bringing up Kellyanne Conway and several other people who supposedly, you know, sneaked in. But I think Trump's overall view is things like the TikTok ban are needed. He likes the Heritage Foundation report, which has more than 80 steps we could take over in coming years to win the competition. We call it Heritage, the new Cold War with China. So this is one of many battles to fight. And if Rand Paul feels that strongly, I hope he understands he's putting our country in jeopardy.
He understands. I think he gets a kick out of it. He's the reason there's no Obamacare, too. So I find him clownish. He has no problem with Iran either. He thinks we're the problem. He just said, just worry about things at home. It's crazy. So in Hong Kong, things are going a little bit crazy. We know that the legislature unanimously passed sweeping new powers yesterday.
Yes.
That will now align the financial hub's national security laws almost like Beijing. Now, you see, the vitality is gone. Home values have tumbled. The stock market is down. I'm seeing a quote here from Stephen Roach of Morgan Stanley say Hong Kong is over. And then you think to yourself, when Beijing is struggling economically, why would you blow up something that earns so much money for you? And the theory is, and see what Mike Pillsbury thinks, President Xi is more into power than he is to prosperity.
I think that's right. And I think what I tried to argue with a lot of Chinese documents in my book, 100-Year Marathon, is they are really obsessed in Beijing and the leadership that there's going to be another collapse of the Soviet Union in China. And they study this obsessively. And they've got a theory of all the things they have to do, and cracking down on Hong Kong is one of them, to prevent a kind of revolution or insurrection against the Chinese Communist Party. And we see them doing things that are against their economic interest just to keep themselves in power. And because this fear that somehow the Americans caused the collapse of the Soviet Communist Party, and the Americans are trying to overthrow the Chinese Communist Party now, it's not true. We're nowhere near that kind of thing with China. But it's their belief, and it's the only explanation I have for why they're killing the goose that laid the golden eggs in Hong Kong with the security crackdown. They could have handled it much better.
Mike Pillsbury with us. Mike, real quick, when it comes to buying land in and around sensitive sites in America or farmland, period, we know different states have said anything. Do you think it's time to take massive action on this, and is it possible?
It's possible, but the problem now is in our legal system, when China comes in and buys farmland, they don't have to report it to anybody, and the American making the sale doesn't have to report it to anybody either. So we don't have a good picture of how much land China is buying and where exactly it is. Sometimes the U.S. Air Force will report it that right near an Air Force base purchases are being made. But the same thing is true with American companies investing, Brian, in the high-tech sectors in China. Right now, they don't have to report that they're doing this. So the level of investment, we know for sure, is way over $1 trillion. Some say $3 or $4 trillion U.S. investment in China that we don't know about it because it's a voluntary reporting system, whether it's farmland or high-tech investment.
Mike Pillsbury, thanks so much. I look forward to talking to you again. We'll see how this moves forward. Mike Pillsbury, thank you. When we come back, we'll have more, including the Hunter Biden Oversight Committee trial has started. We'll bring you the latest.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We have testimony from multiple witnesses that Joe Biden was the brand. He knew what his son and brother were doing and did nothing to stop it. That alone makes him complicit in a scheme to make money off of his public service. But he was not just complicit. He was, as one of today's witnesses has testified, an enabler of this activity. The evidence of the two IRS whistleblowers who came to the Ways and Means Committee has been affirmed by volumes of material provided to Congress, by the testimony of others, and even by the Department of Justice, who finally brought charges against Hunter Biden.
So that is Jason Smith. He is making his statements right now. James Comer Oversight Committee looking into the business practices of the Biden family. Hunter Biden did not show. Devin Archer did not show. He declined to appear. Meanwhile, he did have a triumphant appearance where he came in and said, please put me on the stand. But after going behind closed doors, he said, that's quite enough. I cannot wait for Tony Bobulinski to get up there. I cannot wait for the cross-examination from Jamie Raskin and his ilk. Maybe, I'm not sure if that, oh, he was kicked off this. I was too bad Adam Schiff is not there. It would be kind of funny to see that exchange. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Jason Chaffetz, former oversight chair, next.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
In prior hilarious episodes of this long-running Madcap series, America got to see the following. One, nearly 20 fact witnesses who cannot identify a single act of wrongdoing by President Biden, much less a high crime and misdemeanor, and who overwhelmingly testified that Biden was not involved in any of his family's business adventures. Two, three expert witnesses called by the majority itself who said nothing that they had seen in the tens of thousands of pages of documents adduced by the majority even remotely approach the level of a high crime and misdemeanor. Bank records would show exactly what all the witnesses told us, that Joe Biden was not involved in his family members' businesses.
So that is Jamie Raskin, the pushback from the Democratic side. He has Lev Parnas, who's going to show up. He says he was going to talk about how ashamed he is to go along with Rudy Giuliani in his attempt to get information about the Bidens in Ukraine. We know they were heavily involved in Ukraine. Rudy Giuliani was going after leads in Ukraine, not concocting them. And Lev Parnas was leading them, not making it up. Alex Smirnoff, who they say is part of the process, Alex Smirnoff was working with the FBI and then gave information to the investigation. It has nothing to do with Comer, except for he wanted to read it. And he was told this guy was credible. We paid him a lot of money. The FBI did. So he wanted to use it. So I'm not sure if there's a story behind Smirnoff, if he has one, if he's not as bad as he thought. But bottom line is, Comer didn't go get Smirnoff. He came from the FBI. So please try to pay attention to the dislocation between the truth and Jamie Raskin's rants. Jason Chaffetz knows all about it. Fox News contributor, former Oversight Committee chair. Jason, so far we've seen both opening statements. I know you were on the air, I think, what Comer's reading a little bit. But what do you expect today? What do you think of Raskin's remarks?
Well, Raskin is just telling a total complete falsehood. I mean, that there are millions of documented dollars that were flowing to the Bidens. Millions. And there are some basic questions that still need to be answered. For instance, why did $100,000 end up into the grandkids' account, to Joe Biden's grandkids' account? Can Jamie Raskin answer that
question? How did it get there?
Well, we think it was potentially from, according to these news articles, from Louis Free, the former FBI director, who put it in there. And I don't know how he would characterize it, but it looks like it was a potential hey, we want to continue to do business with you. But again, these are questions that need to be peppered to them. I would love to see, I'm probably the only one stuck on this, but there was a time when Hunter Biden was accompanying his dad on Air Force Two when he was vice president, going to Mexico, saying, you've been to the White House, you've been to the residency, I've opened up everybody in government for you, I expect to do this deal. And when we land in Mexico City, we want to consummate this deal. And part of what they're doing is bringing Jeff Cooper. So if Joe Biden had no knowledge, no participation with Hunter Biden's business, why did Hunter Biden's business partner go on Air Force Two at our expense? There are things like this. And these people that are testifying today have firsthand knowledge of Joe Biden personally being involved and engaged, being on phone calls, being in meetings, and engaged in the family business.
Yeah, Bob Alinsky's opening up right now, and he is fired up. He's a Penn State wrestler, self-made multimillionaire, intelligence officer. Good luck trying to puncture holes in his credibility. Good luck, Jamie Raskin. This guy, Jason Galanis, is interesting. He's serving a 14-year prison sentence. He's going to testify from federal prison camp, minimum security prison for male inmates in Montgomery, Alabama. He has indications, too, about what this family was actually up to. They'll say, well, he's in prison. Well, really? Guess where Hunter Biden's going? Guess who's been indicted? Devin Archer also. I guess he's looking at prison. He decided not to show up today. But Bob Alinsky will. Now, Lev Parnas, he's interesting because he was working with Rudy Giuliani. He went to jail for 14 months. He wants to come out and tell everybody that this is a big hoax. Your thoughts?
Well, again, you got two people with firsthand knowledge. I mean, part of this goes back to this Russian oligarch who supposedly, you know, put something like $100 million in real estate into a business that they were involved with. This got this big diamond. And why didn't Joe Biden, why wasn't the Biden and Obama administration, and certainly the Biden administration now, why did this person as an oligarch escape all of these sanctions that supposedly we were getting tough on Russia? Does it maybe have to do with the fact that there were millions of dollars in nice gifts and dollars that were flowing into the Biden's bank accounts? It's a pretty legitimate question.
By the way, we'll bring this back shortly. In the opening remarks Tony Bobulinski was given, he let everybody know that he thinks that Raskin and others are liars. He said it. Raskin just screamed out in the middle of it. They stopped it. Then Comer said to continue. Raskin says, no, he called all of us liars. Now they're going back and forth. What happens when you have a witness? Jason, you were in the oversight as chair. What happens when you have a witness come out and say, like, Jason Chaffetz a liar? Do you have a right to stop that testimony?
No. No, you don't. Actually, they get to say what they want to say. So Republicans get their time, and the witness gets to answer. And then when it's Democrats' time, they get to question the witness.
So I want you
to
hear.
You don't just get to say, I don't like the way he talked to me.
Right.
That's
were you ever insulted by
works.
A witness?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
right.
Yeah.
So I want you to hear Bob Alinsky. Here's some of his opening remarks.
The truth involving the deep corruption of the Biden family, including the malfeasance of the sitting president of the United States, might be raw and unpleasant. The American people must hear it. You're presented here today with two narratives in this investigation, a false one being pushed by Joe Biden, a serial liar and fabulous, now under this impeachment investigation for public corruption, his brother Jim Biden, a 75-year-old man who can't keep his lies straight, including under oath, and his son Hunter Biden, a chronic drug addict facing two indictments with 12 counts. You also have before you the truth, confirmed by multiple Biden family business partners over many years and backed up by mountains of irrefutable evidence, including text messages, emails, documents, recordings.
So, and he is just taking the paint off the walls. So good luck with that. I cannot wait for the cross on him. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, this is why you do these types of hearings. This is what's great about America. I do think Hunter Biden and Devin Archer should have been there, and I do think that the committee should have issued a subpoena.
So did you tell Comer that?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
so why didn't he?
I don't know. I think they're getting some bad advice from the counsel there in the speaker's office. I think they've been weak to non-existent. Like, for instance, Jason Galanis, they should have put a writ before the judge in Alabama requesting his physical presence, not just a video conference, dozens and dozens and dozens of times through the years. Even though somebody might be in prison, they can still come testify before Congress, especially a low, low risk individual like that.
So, and if you want to go after him, Lev Parnas spent 14 months in prison. So if you want to, everybody that's indicted or imprisoned, if you want to just say their testimony shouldn't matter, the only person that's going to be speaking is Tony Bobulinski.
Well, yeah, in person. But, you know, Jason Galanis, we'll see if they have technical troubles. Let's see how the Biden administration handles allowing somebody to testify in not so nice light about the Bidens. But he should be able to communicate, you know.
Jason Chaffetz with us. Jason, here's more.
I am the only Biden family business partner with an impeccable military record. I'm grateful that this country has given me the freedom to be successful. I worked hard to become independently wealthy. I've taken several businesses public, sold multiple businesses to some of the world's best private equity firms. In fact, my business success is why they sought me out. However, what they have done is repugnant to me. I am here today because I'm a patriot and I'm a truth teller. We keep hearing from certain corners that our democracy is at risk and democracy is on the ballot in 24. Yet the same people preaching this mantra know better. They continue to lie directly to the American people without hesitation and remorse.
And then he was interrupted a short time after. So Raskin's going to try to diminish him. Everything he said about his background, along with his something I happen to know personally for people that know him, he was an animal wrestler. He is tough as nails. He cannot wait to mix it up. He begged Jake Tapper to call him up and interview him. Nobody wants to hear what he has to say. They didn't want to hear it in 2020 when he stood before the debates. And now he's telling the truth now. All those people say there's no there. Listen to this guy. Jason.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. He has direct firsthand knowledge, not only of his interaction with Hunter Biden and I believe Jim Biden, but Joe Biden. I mean, he was in the meeting with them. And so that's why you got to hear from this witness. And if you're going to try to, you know, go after his credibility, then do it. But, you know, thus far, look, he's been brewing on this for a few years now. He's fully prepared to what he wants to say based on his firsthand experience.
When you have a witness that's this good, right, if you're a Democrat, is one of the strategies to not engage him? Like, let's get this guy out of here as quick as possible?
Oh, yeah. I mean, but they can't help themselves. I think what you're going to see is they're going to go after him because his testimony is so damning. That's going to be the problem. You can shut up and let it go. But see, when you start arguing, guess what? Places like Fox News and others take it live. And that's the Jamie Raskin cannot help himself. He can't. He's not much of a strategy person. And you know what? He can't. He can't stick to the truth. That's the problem.
All right, we're going to see what's going to happen. Jason, thanks. You know what kind of bothers me, to be totally candid? I know you and James Comer like each other, work with each other. I've seen you present together. It kind of bothers me he's not going with your suggestions.
I don't know. Look, if Hunter Biden didn't show, the reason we're doing a second one here is because Hunter Biden didn't show at the first one. Should have issued another subpoena. And if he didn't show up, then, you know what, take a vote and hold him in contempt. You just yesterday had Peter Navarro go to jail for not showing up. Is that going to happen with Hunter Biden? No. And it's because Republicans are being feckless.
All right,
that's the frustration.
It is. You can't go halfway.
Yeah.
Now, Goldman, he's another treat. So we'll hear what he has to say in New York. All right. Thanks so much, Jason. Appreciate it. This is the big day. And if they don't score today, they're going to have a trouble going forward for a long term because this is the case.
Yep.
I look forward to talking to you. Wait a second. Before I let you go, Alex Smirnoff, should you tell our audience exactly why he's a player? Now that he evidently is in jail for lying, making things up, Alex Smirnoff was an agent for the FBI. He was high paid and well qualified and well thought of. His name came up only because the FBI interviewed him because he came forward. This was not James Comer's doing. Then he ends up in jail and they say, well, here's all your witnesses. Should you just give some clarity to this?
Well, look, the American people, via the Department of Justice, paid this guy hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousand dollars. They called him a highly credible witness. One of the things that he made these allegations about is he claimed that there were some videotapes of Joe Biden. Now, evidently, the word got back to Senator Grassley and then James Comer, Chairman Comer. And so they wanted to know. It was non-classified information on this form, and they wanted to know what are the details of this. And now suddenly it took years for the FBI to go back, and suddenly they charge him with a crime for lying to the FBI. Wait a second. You've been paying him for years. And so why didn't they do the investigation way back when? The witnesses have said nobody from the FBI even contacted us. Just because they weren't pursuing the case. That's the fundamental problem.
Jason Chaffetz, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to watch the testimony. I'll bring back more from Bob Alinsky. Lev Parnas for the Democrats is speaking out now. He's going to talk about how corrupt Rudy Giuliani is, that he claims. When I think in many ways he was leading Rudy Giuliani, which he says was evidence of Biden's unscrupulous behavior in Ukraine. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Rep. Dan Goldman and Jamie Raskin, both lawyers, and Mr. Goldman, a former prosecutor with the SDNY from New York, will continue to lie today in this hearing and then go straight to the media to tell more lies. Hunter Biden's defense attorney, Abby Lowell, weaponizes letters to Congress to try to smear my name.
Mr. Chairman.
The cold, hard facts.
Mr. Chairman.
In an attempt to save his powerfully connected client and his father. I challenge Mr. Lowell to make those claims on national television so he can be held accountable for his lies.
Tony Bobulinski came out firing. That's how you got to how direct it was. So that was his opening statement. And then Jamie Raskin goes crazy. And since he's calling me a liar, here is what happened next.
For saying, I apologize for the disruption from the
Okay. Am I supposed to say it's my time, Mr. Raskin?
Yeah. But please, Mr. Bobulinski, please.
Okay.
Come to order. Mr. Bobulinski, please proceed.
Okay.
Please proceed. I apologize for the disruption from the minority.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, save his time, but he called members of this committee liars, and I just want to know whether the order and decorum requirements of House Rule 11 apply to witnesses appearing before the committee. Does it apply or does it not?
There's decorum from the members. We've asked for that. There's no language that I'm aware of pertaining to a witness.
Yeah. Thank you.
Make sure we didn't waste any of his time on the opening statement. Mr. Bobulinski, I'm sorry for the disruption. Please continue your opening statement.
And he went back, and he can't wait. And he's going to spar with Goldman, and he's going to spar with Raskin. And now you have Jason Gallant, who's serving 14 years in prison. He will be testifying to from federal prison, a minimum security prison, I should add, in Montgomery, Alabama, for white-collar crimes that he committed. It looks like Devin Archer did some unsavory activity. Whatever he did. With finances, he was a longtime partner, one of the founding members of Rosemont Seneca, with Hunter Biden, who's also indicted and was about to skate if a judge didn't stand up and say this is a ridiculous deal. So he's going to be tried in California. Jason Gallant, another business partner, is in jail. Devin Archer about to go to jail, but it is the Republicans who are making things up. Hunter Biden had one product. He wasn't an international lawyer wanted by all. He wasn't a great business mind needed by all. He was trading on his dad's name and his influence. And he has it in text messages. And when a text message gets specific without spellings, they go, well, I was on drugs. I don't think that this is going to lead to Joe Biden's impeachment unless there's something unbelievable. But don't you think it's important to know what type of character he is, what he was up to, what illegal activities he was in the middle of, how his family was trading on his name, and might be continuing up until recently when he became president of the United States. Before you go in and close the curtain and make a vote, say, well, you know, I don't like some of the Trump stuff did and this stuff with Stormy Daniels. Well, you should understand the guy he's going against. And as Joe Biden loves to say, don't compare me to the almighty. Compare me to the alternative. Yeah, Joe, you're the alternative. And we're pretty clear what you were up to as vice president and president. This Lev Parnas guys came out and pushed back. Okay, we heard some of that. On Ukraine. So let's say Lev Parnas was asked to go in Ukraine and find something you didn't find anything. That was called the impeachment. We went through it again. My eyes roll in my head when I go back to the impeachment time, the pushback and the pullback and the impeachment that took place and the vote that happened, and then it ultimately got stopped. All right? But that's one element. It doesn't explain China. It doesn't explain the mayor of Moscow. It doesn't explain Romania. It doesn't explain the weapons charges. And it doesn't change Carlos Slim in Mexico. That's Ukraine. Nice try, Lev. Who, by the way, I wish I never met. Brian Kilmeade.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. 1-866-408-7669. Jesse Waters in studio. If you're smart enough to get the app, watching online, if also watching on Fox Nation, you're seeing them. We're also monitoring the events with the Hunter Biden situation. And we have a special guest at the bottom of the hour, Tony Orlando, calling it quits on performing. One of the great personalities you will meet in any generation. He'll be joining us in studio. But I just watched you on TV. Congratulations on your book, Jesse. It is now out this week. This is the day of the one day after the release. Get it together. Troubling Tales from the Liberal Fringe. Of course, you're the same Jesse Waters from Primetime and The Five, right?
Same guy.
Right.
No body double over here.
Right. I don't think you can. Well, that's the thing about The Five. You can't really do it from home.
No, as much as I've tried.
Right.
They won't let me zoom into the show.
Which you prefer. Some of the explosive things that we're seeing right now with the Hunter Biden situation. For those people who say nothing's happening, he didn't do anything wrong. Why Republicans, this is a wild goose chase. What do you say to them?
Well, I say, look where the money went. You have millions of dollars coming from China and from overseas, and Joe Biden keeps lying about it. If everything was kosher, why do you keep lying about it? We saw the $40,000 check hit the bank account. Biden said it was a loan. His own accountant said there's no evidence of a loan. Also, you had the deposition by Hunter Biden, and the investigators asked him, how many times did you pay for your dad's household expenses? Over 100? And Hunter said, I don't know. We also know he loses diamonds every time he's bribed.
It was a gift.
Yes, and it's probably not even really official. That valuable of a rock, he said, even though it was appraised at 80 grand.
When he has no money, we know that too. By the way, a lot of people with Hunter Biden go to jail. Devin Archer en route. There's going to be a guy, testimony, Jason Golan, opened up from jail. Hunter Biden indicted. Tony Bobulinski comes out impeccable. How would you describe his opening statements? He was blistering.
He was
and he's a witness to it.
Shot out of a cannon and unimpeachable credentials. Naval officer. He has clearances. His whole family put their lives on the line for this country. And the funny thing is, Brian, when he handed over the laptop to the FBI, he's never been interviewed as a follow-up by the FBI. 3 years. The guy who was sitting in the Four Seasons with Joe Biden and his brother and his son, and they were talking business, and he's never been interviewed by any of the FBI investigators. If that's not a cover-up, I don't know what is.
Right, and I want to get to your book, too, but can we play Eric? Instead of Lev Parnas, can we, for people that are just tuning in this hour, can we play the first bit of the Bobulinski statement? Can we do that?
The truth involving the deep corruption of the Biden family, including the malfeasance of the sitting president of the United States, might be raw and unpleasant. The American people must hear it. You're presented here today with two narratives in this investigation. A false one being pushed by Joe Biden, a serial liar and fabulous, now under this impeachment investigation for public corruption. His brother, Jim Biden, a 75-year-old man who can't keep his lies straight, including under oath. And his son, Hunter Biden, a chronic drug addict facing two indictments with 12 counts. You also have before you the truth, confirmed by multiple Biden family business partners over many years and backed up by mountains of irrefutable evidence, including text messages, emails, documents, recordings.
So, and it got worse from there. In fact, he called Jamie Raskin a liar and Goldman a liar. He goes, he lies about me. And they tried to go, you can't call me a liar.
I don't know what the rule was. He goes, isn't rule 11, you can't impeach the credibility of any of the people behind the stage? I don't know. I think when you have Hunter Biden texting the Chinese, pay me the money, my dad's sitting right here and he's going to be really angry. And when they ask him about him under oath, Hunter said it was the wrong number.
Right.
Okay, you texted the wrong number, but the next day you got $6 million wired to your checking account. I think that was the right number.
You know, if Don Jr. was sitting there saying, my dad's right next to me, we're very angry, and we have long memories, and we want payment now, and you better not put anybody in between, do you think people would say, I'm sure he was on drugs? No. Well, bottom line is Trumps aren't on drugs, and they don't drink. Jesse, your book Get It Together is out. It's already number one. You're going to be in Northville, New Jersey this Saturday on the 23rd. Then on the 24th in Point Pleasant Beach, New Jersey. That's the Dana Perino home base.
Yes, will be doing a cameo.
Yeah, so it's great. And the thing is, they have set up, in the beginning they set up, you just sign. But now they have set up a living room. And you're going to pack the place. And they'll have probably a speaker outside. It'll be great. Fort Myers, Florida. Fantastic place. We have a great affiliate out there. So go down there. This is on the April 13th, April 20th in Beach Haven, New Jersey. I've never been to New Jersey. I hear it's scary. Vero Beach, Florida. This is what you're going to love about Vero Beach.
Yeah.
Two tiers. Have you done this on your book tour?
No.
Two tiers. So it's like back to your days when you used to do full stadiums.
Yeah.
Giant Stadium, just entertain. It's going to remind you of that. And then Yorba Linda, California. That is the Nixon Library.
Correct. Nixon Library. We're going to be all over the place. And you get to do things to me that probably you won't allow other people to do.
In
you
what
can
respect?
Run your fingers through my hair.
Oh, you
can nuzzle me. You can cuddle me.
As long as you buy the book.
Touch me wherever you want. As long as you buy the book, I'll sign it. I'll take photos. I'll engage in conversation and pretend like I'm listening.
No, you do listen. That's part of this book.
I know.
Listen to people
who
disagree.
I finally learned how to listen.
And you'll get this book. How many people did you interview?
I interviewed about 24 people, and they're probably some of the most fringe, crazy activists you could ever imagine. People that topple statues, want to legalize drugs, people that smoke toad venom. That gentleman will be on the show tonight. And they explain to me why they believe what they believe. It's completely irrational, as are many of the belief systems that we hear from the left. But it explains why they have these irrational beliefs. And it's all personality disorders. These all people had dysfunctional childhoods, barstool dads, nymphomaniac mothers. And they have major issues, but they're saying, I don't have issues. Society has issues. It's not my problem. It's your problem. So in order to solve their problems, they have to tear down society. And we can't let them do that, Brian. They just have to get it together.
Right. And that's where you got the name. Did you do this and say, I keep saying that to these people, I'm going to name my book this?
What my mother told me to get it together a couple times growing up. And I'm sure that was told to you. And I don't know if you've ever listened, but you seem to be on the right path.
Thank you. I was not a problem child. I made
You're
sure.
You're just a problem adult.
Right. To you, Jesse, and people like you. I want you to hear a little of this is your take on something in your book that I think is important. This is an idea of what's going to be in the book. This is Olanda Rowe, correct? This is Olanda Rowe from Primetime on why eating meat is murder. So let's go back to Primetime. Cut 48.
Because animals are sentient beings that have feelings just like dogs and cats. And when they're sent to slaughter, they're murdered, they're killed, their life is taken away from them. So if it's not killing, then what is it?
So I'm saying I'm hungry for a hamburger, and you would consider that homicide?
Well, they're getting their life taken, and it's needless because alternatives exist, so...
So you only want people eating salads, chickpeas. What if we're really hungry? Is that enough sustenance?
I mean, I get hungry and I eat all the time. There's like a lot of alternatives. There's plants. They exist.
Vegan activist.
She says in her ideal world that the president of the United States could throw me in prison for eating a hamburger. And I told her, well, what about the Olympics? What about all of our athletes? Are they going to go into the games without eating steak, eating chicken, eating lamb chops?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to lose.
Right.
They can't have a vegan diet and go up against the Russians. We're going to get slaughtered. I want to win gold. I don't want bronze. I'm an American.
Good point.
She didn't care.
Didn't care. And do people know you're putting them in a book?
Now they do. No, we had to get a lot of people in writing to say, yes, this is for the project. Some of the people's names we changed. Some chapters I had to take out. We interviewed a pimp, spoke to a guy who's a pimp, has multiple women under his wing for about 2 hours. He told me how the game works, and my editor suggested I remove it. And I thought that might be a good idea.
Right. So you did take it out.
So we took it out, but everything else is in there, and they've all agreed to it. And some of the people are actually happy that they got to speak to me because it showed a little growth. After you pour your heart out and tell your life story to people, I know you do that to Ainsley every morning, you feel better. Right. And you feel like you might have learned something. So this has been a learning experience for them and me.
All right, for you. So do you think we're going to get to a point of society where we start listening to each other and this is an extreme example?
You hit on it because it's easy to demonize people when you don't talk to them or you don't listen to them. And you're on radio and you do Fox and Friends, so you actually engage in conversation. You might disagree with everything fundamentally they believe. Like this guy was telling me he is one of those advocates for minor attracted people. We call them pedophiles. Normal people call them pedophiles. So this guy is trying to explain to me, and this is in the book for about 3 hours, why this is normal, why we shouldn't stigmatize pedophilia. You know, I listened. It was disgusting. But you kind of understand where these freaks are coming from.
Right.
And that can give you a better idea about how to address these problems.
My fear is that soon that'll be a category.
That's what they're trying to do.
Like newcomers.
So you got
newcomers into our country. Illegal aliens.
Right.
Now they're migrants. Now they're newcomers.
Right.
Like the kid that just moved into school. Who's the kid? Where are you from? He's from Iowa. Okay,
right.
Say hello. Newcomers are just like everybody else. So you have to make sure, Jesse, you don't give in too much.
Right.
I don't mind you listening.
Are you
Are
you calling me soft?
I'm worried about that.
Do you think I can be converted?
Right.
Because do you think I'm now going to be a man who identifies as a wolf? Because that's the last chapter. This guy identifies as a wolf. He howled on my show.
Right.
He rumbles in the ground with wolves, cuddles them, goes to wolf sanctuaries,
right,
and literally thinks he's a wolf. I will not convert.
And you're going to make him more famous?
I'm a man.
Have you heard from anybody who said, Jesse, I had no idea. My friends are calling me. My parents are calling me.
You keep making this book out to be some sort of sandbag job.
I worry about it.
Are you worried about a lawsuit?
Right. I'm just saying, why would you ever commit to to talking to you about their – these aren't one of these things like, I am for Obamacare. All right, let's debate it. This is like, I am for the most bizarre thing possible, and I'd like to be published around the globe.
We spoke to a black supremacist who called me the devil.
Right.
We spoke to someone who brought an emotional support squirrel on an airplane and couldn't figure out why she was arrested.
Mm-hmm.
These people are probably dying for attention, but I did not go out and look for people to destroy. I think the black supremacist is already going to have a hard time finding work.
Yes.
But these people poured their life stories out to me. And you think, why would you tell Jesse Waters all of your deepest, darkest secrets? And that's a great question.
And you still can't answer, but you're glad they did.
I'm glad they did.
It's all in Get It Together. Where do you go to find out if you're going to be in a city near you? Because a lot of times with the successful books, you expand the tour. Where do people go? Do you have a jessewaters.com?
Well, I have two shows. I have and I have the 8 o'clock. Right. I don't have a website. Someone has stolen my website and squatted on it. It's a cyber squatter that owns jessewaters.com. And he won't sell it to me.
Are you kidding?
And I've raised the price. He still won't sell it. I think he's waiting for me to get really famous. And then he's just going to bend me over and I'll have to pay him a lot of money.
Bend you over?
Figuratively, Brian.
Understood. Jess, you sticking around?
I'll stick around.
All right, so we got more. This hearing's unwinding right now. I'm watching Raw Jamie Raskin, which sounds like a X-rated film, but I'm watching this feed come in, and this is an explosive thing. Plus, I think people are walking in there creating some havoc. We have a lot to discuss. We also have we also have China hearings. Might be more even substantive than we're going on right now. And yesterday, I did a Fox Nation special on the Afghan hearings that took place. And the real culpable people that we wanted to see in front of us were the Secretary of State, Jake Sullivan, and the President of the United States. But unfortunately, we just had the military generals saying, we told them, they didn't listen. You'll listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
But after turning over every stone and going down every rabbit hole, including interviewing Viktor Shokin and Zlochevsky, the owner of Burisma, Did you ever find the smoking gun or any evidence that Donald Trump was looking for to paste on Joe Biden?
On the contrary, Representative Raskin, not only did we keep hitting dead walls and not finding the smoking gun, but we kept running into sources of the information that was coming out of Russia.
In fact, Joe Biden was part of a global campaign, including by the United States, to oppose corruption and to go after the corrupt forces in Ukraine. Isn't that right?
Yes, sir.
Lev Parnas, who was Rudy Giuliani's business partner, went to jail for 14 months, is a representative of the Democratic Party in this, saying there's no there there. This guy's Ukraine. Whatever happened to Ukraine, Rudy Giuliani, that's up to them. That is a very small portion of what Hunter Biden was up to and what Joe Biden may or may not have known about. And Tony Bobulinski laid it all out. Jesse Waters here. His book is Get It Together. It is now out. His first stop is this Saturday in Northville, New Jersey. He's a nice guy. He says you can touch him, but must show a receipt that you bought the book. And then the next day is in Point Pleasant Beach, New Jersey, which is a fantastic bookstore. It's in Fort Myers, Florida, on the April 13th, the next weekend, Beach Haven, New Jersey. Again, a lot of New Jersey, Vero Beach, Florida. And Yorba Linda, California. Being at the Nixon Library, you'll pack the place. It's going to be unbelievable. Jesse, first off, on this, I'm sure you're going to cover tonight on primetime, Lev Parnas got involved because he was leading Rudy Giuliani to, they said, was something going on in Ukraine. This is a very small portion of this.
When I talk about corruption with the Bidens, I don't bring in Ukraine because it's too murky.
Absolutely.
And that's just a kickback scheme from Burisma that you don't need, because they're going to try to use Parnas to neutralize Bobulinski. But Bobulinski's deals was with China. So forget about Parnas. Forget about Ukraine. Focus on the Chinese money. That's where the action was. That's where the corrupt deal was. That was the CEFC. That was the Belt and Road Initiative. That was an initiative that was trying to replace the United States as the dominant world power, and the Biden family was in bed with them. It was Chinese intelligence. It was Chinese military. They were trying to take over the United States, and the Biden family was getting bribed by them.
Bigger picture question. You and Get It Together, you talk to people on the fringe left wing, right? The antithesis is Harold Ford, center left, right? Do you think – and then maybe center right is Corey Mills, or center right is Nancy Mace. Do you think after the Biden-Trump era is done, do you see people coming together at all in the country? Do you see the format of the show in prime time a year after Trump's out of office, let's say in 4 years, or he's off the scene in 8 months? Do you see it coming together, or you'd see the other way?
I don't like to make predictions after the red wave comment.
Because you said that there'd be a red wave.
Britt Hume told me, Jesse, never make predictions again. You don't know what you're talking about.
He told you on your show,
didn't he?
He
told me that, and then he told me to stop yelling at Jessica so much.
Right.
So I've tried not to make predictions, but I will say this. A lot of people have been discredited on the far left because of the Russia hoax. So you don't even have to listen to them anymore. In terms of people in the middle, whether that's Harold Ford, whether that's whoever you think is in the middle on the right – it's about management. And we've seen in New York City, if you can't manage the city, you got to go. And this guy Adams can't manage the city. So that's why I'm endorsing Harold Ford Jr. for mayor of New York City.
I'm backing you up.
Because only Democrats can win.
Would he be able to still do the five? Because it's only an hour, right? You don't have to prep for anything.
I mean, it's like not that hard to do the five.
You could just
even Gutfeld can do it.
Absolutely, and he's pretty good at it. And by the way, he seems to be just as jealous of you as he is of me. You're now a target every night on his show.
Yeah, you know what? I actually
Thanks,
should kick his butt.
Thanks.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're truly excited to be here tonight. And for those of you who don't know who I is, my name is Tony Orlando. And Dawn happens to be two very lovely young ladies. So I'd like you to meet them right now. On my right, Mrs. Joyce Vincent Wilson. Sorry about that, fellas. She's married.
Guess who's not?
This is Thelma Hopkins. By the way, this confuses people sometimes. The name is Thelma, not Thelma.
Well, it used to be Thelma, but my mama kept telling me to get the H out of there.
People sometimes ask how we happen to find each other.
We just lifted his mustache and there he was.
And that is Tony Orlando introducing himself and Dawn on the first Tony Orlando and Dawn show in 1974. And guess where we're playing that? Because in studio is the great Tony Orlando with a big announcement. But first, you're impressed. You did not know that was you.
No, you know, so my voice was so different then.
Yeah, a little higher?
Higher and nasally, and and I didn't sound like I was from New York at all. I rehearsed that, by the way. I remember rehearsing.
Do you remember being nervous?
Nervous?
Yeah.
That's an understatement.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, there I was. That was 36 million people watching.
Wow.
Remember, that's there was only three networks. That was it. There was no cable. There was no none of that. So it's just ABC, CBS, and NBC.
What led up to you getting that show? Do you remember who gave you the break?
Yeah, I do. I would do. It's funny. I was filling in for Sonny and Cher at Westbury Music Theater. My manager then, Mark Gordon, managed the Fifth Dimension. They were the opening act for Cher. She got sick. They canceled. He managed us as well. He put me and Dawn in front. Freddie Silverman, who was then head of CBS. Right before NBC, sees us, thinking he's going to see Cher. And when she was sick, he comes backstage and he goes, "How would you like to do a television show?" I said, "I'd love it." He says, How do we block this where you walk through the audience and have people sing along and you do jokes? How do we block that?" I said, "What do you mean by block? How do we rehearse that?" I said, "Well, how do you rehearse a football game?" I said, "You follow the ball, right?" He goes, "Yes." "Well, say hello to the ball."
Right.
And we shook hands.
Wow.
And when I got the show, my first guest was Jackie Gleason. Now, remember, Brian.
Did you know him?
No. But Jackie Gleason was
bigger than life.
He was bigger than life. And there we were, three kids. I was 28 years old. I look back on it now, and I give thanks to the good Lord for that opportunity.
How did you meet Dawn?
I was producing Barry Manilow. I signed Barry Manilow and produced his first records. And in the studio, I hired them. They were hot-butted sold with Isaac Hayes at the Apollo Theater.
Where did the name Dawn come from to name both? Do you remember?
Yeah, I was working for Clive Davis at the time.
How many names do you know?
Well, I was running the music division for Clive. I figured my days were over. I was behind the desk.
Right.
And I did the favor for a friend of mine who said, "I broke, Tony. Can you put your voice on this song called Candida?" I said, "I can't do that. I work for Clive Davis." He says, "Please, Tony, I'm broke. Please." I said, "I'll tell you what. I'll go in the studio with you. If you get it in an hour, it's yours. But don't call it Tony Orlando." And I went. I did it. To make the long story longer, I finished it in an hour, and the record comes out as Dawn. And I call him up, and I said, what is this name? He's, and your daughter's name is Dawn, right?
No, my wife.
Your wife's name is Dawn. So, similar story, because the president of the record company's daughter, her name was Dawn. So he figured he'd get in good sights with them, see? So he named the group Dawn after the guy's daughter.
Wow.
And then Tony Orlando and Dawn didn't happen until the TV show.
That is incredible. And you guys had great chemistry together, and you like working the audience.
I do.
Yeah.
You know, this is
you like people.
I do, Brian. In fact, that's the saddest part of calling it a day as a concert performer is the people, is the live performance.
Right.
It's nothing like it. To hear that sound of laughter, to see those faces. I'll miss it. I've been doing this since I'm 16 years old.
Right.
My first hit record was in 1961 with Carole King. It was a song called Halfway to Paradise, Before You Were Born. Okay? And that's 64 years ago. And here I am now at Mohegan Sun on the 22nd of March, closing it out after 64 years in this business. It's been a...
So this week.
This week, man.
Wow.
And it's bittersweet, but... It's time. I saw that Gladys Knight retired, Elton John retired, Kenny Loggins retired, Oak Ridge Boys retired, Bill Medley retired. It's time. It's time. There's a whole new audience that's come on. Times have changed.
But you look fantastic. And also, what I was just saying before to close out yesterday's show was, don't say the 80's old. Don't say we're putting down the president because he's 80. There's nothing to do with being 80.
No.
It's how you act when you're 80. I mean, I looked in here. I would swear you're 60 or 70. I want you to hear another moment that Pete pulled. Pete's your new friend, one of our great producers. Here's you and Freddie Prinze going out at each other.
Oh, God.
And imitating each other. Cut four.
And now I want to to present brilliant young comedy talent from Chico and the Man, one of the truly great and outstanding young men that's ever been my pleasure to see on any stage in America. Did I say America? Nay, the world. Let's have a warm welcome for a man, credit to his race, good to his folks. Great, great comedy genius. Mr. Freddie Prinze.
Hello, for Barbers. See? Well, it's wonderful to be here, yes, indeed, for the birth of a new act. Tony Orlando and Dawn has just become Chico and the Chicklets.
Man, the girls didn't even notice it was me out here instead of you.
You girls, I mean, you really can't tell the difference between Freddie Prinze and myself.
Frankly, guys, you all look alike to us.
Can't get away with that stuff today,
no,
boy.
You can, no,
but
I think
you know, the funny
have,
thing is that's Freddie posing as me in the opening, introducing me as him.
Right. Did you guys went over that? How?
Yes, because he said to me, hey, man, can I open sing? Can I sing? I said, why don't you open the show? He goes, we had the mustache, the whole thing, right? The long hair. And he came out as me. And for the first few minutes, the audience thought that was me. You know, it was Freddie. Let me tell you something about Freddie Prinze, Brian. He only was in this business for 2 years. Think of it.
How old was he?
22 years old when he died. Chico and the Man was only 2 years. And yet people still, to this day, remember the comedy, the genius, the timing of this kid, who, by the way, was hosting The Tonight Show at 21 years old.
It's insane.
It's insane.
Imagine what he could have been.
You know something, Brian? There's no telling. In fact, when Freddie died, him and I, we did a sketch that we wrote together, by the way, for my television show called Road to Puerto Rico. And it was a takeoff on the Hope and Crosby movies, which were road movies. It was Hope and Crosby, singer and comic. So we did a sketch and Hope calls and said, hey, can we continue the movie thing? And we were about to sign a deal with Paramount Pictures to do 10 road movies. If Freddie Prinze would have lived, there's no telling, because he was an incredible actor, as you saw in Chico and the Man, and he was an impeccable comic, and he was an amazing singer, which people didn't know. He was an eclectic performer.
And you guys hit it off right away.
He was like my younger brother.
That's unbelievable. So I always watched the Jerry Lewis telethons at Labor Day all the time. To me, it was a show. I forgot sometimes you were raising money for a great cause till the very end. Here's a little of you at the Jerry Lewis telethon. You co-hosted with Jerry Lewis.
Yep.
Here's some of those moments. Cut five.
Hellos to take care of, namely Atlantic City and my dear friend, powerful performer, probably the singularly most talented one entertainer in show business. I would like to have you. Are we going to New York or to Atlantic City? Well, I'm changing the introduction because this isn't the most singularly greatest one entertainer that you ever saw in your whole life. He may be the second, but it's my dear friend, Mr. Tony Orlando in New York, ladies and gentlemen. Tony.
Third.
Thanks, Tony. How is it in New York?
It's fantastic. The enthusiasm in the city is like it always is every year here for you, as you can hear from the studio audience that's been applauding since the intro of the show.
So you did it for 33 years, right?
33 years.
How much money did you guys raise? Do you have any idea?
You know something? I think about Jerry all the time. And I became very close to Jerry Lewis. We became very close. And the one thing that people didn't realize about Jerry is that he single-handedly created the NBA telethon. And he single-handedly raised billions with a B. But what he did do, he didn't see the day because he passed away. But without the telethon, there would not have been money for the science of DNA.
Wow.
Just think. Because DNA was the only trailblazer to find a cure, the whole science of DNA, because of that money that was donated, made DNA what it is today, and we know what it is today. Jerry never got credit for it. Jerry never got credit for creating what is now known as a telethon. What an incredible way to raise money for any organization. Okay. I think Jerry Lewis is one of the great, great, great people in our country who gave back his great talent to raise money for those people who had that neuromuscular disease of muscular dystrophy.
And one of the great things on YouTube is I get a chance to see or remind me of some of these great performers in the past. One guy that pops up all the time, maybe I'm being profiled, is Jackie Gleason. You started to tell me a story about him.
Brian, I don't know if you have the time for this story, but I'll give it a shot, okay? And I'll try to make it as concise as possible. My first guest was Jackie Gleason. Now, anybody listening to this show, I know your demographic.
That's where we left off.
I know your demographic goes from young kids to old ages, to Biden's age, okay? And mine and Paul McCartney, because Paul's 2 years older than both of us.
He is, okay.
Yeah. So Gleason comes in. Now, there's a happy ending to this story, so it's going to sound terrible as I tell it. But Gleason comes in and he says, who are the two in the amateur night in Dixie? Now, the shvort in Yiddish is the N-word.
Wow.
And we know that both ladies, Thelma and Joyce, are black women. And I'm sitting right behind him, and I never met him. My first guest,
right?
CBS is excited. He doesn't do ever a show. And I walk up. I'm 28 years old. I don't think I'd handle it the same way today as I did then, but I got mad. And I walked up and I said, Mr. Gleason, I'm appalled by what you said. You owe those two girls an apology. If you don't think they'll know what means, you're wrong. And by the way, I am your amateur night in Dixie. My name's Tony Orlando. He goes, I'm out of here, pal. And he walks out, Brian. And leaves. Well, the president of CBS comes down. What are you, crazy? We got Jackie Gleason as your first guest, and you're going to have him leave? I said, listen, what would you do if he said, how is the amateur night in Dixie and these two, what would you do? Would you stand up for them? Would you stand there and just take it? He said, no, you're right. He said, but I'm going to fix it. Just shut up. This is your first show. It'll be fixed. I go on. Next thing that happens is Gleason says, now listen, we do the cue cards, no ad-libbing. You understand that? No ad-libbing. Only the great one ad-libs. So I go, yes, sir, Mr. Gleason. We get on stage. The first piece of business is, I'll teach you everything I know, even how sweet it is. I'll teach you everything. One of these days to the moon. All of his Gleasonisms, right? He goes, camera one. Pull back. Let's start again. I'll teach you everything I know, even how sweet it is. Camera three, he's yelling. Why are you on a close-up? He's directing from the stage. The audience is sitting.
Wait, is this live? This isn't live.
This is live off the stage. No, this is live to tape.
Oh, live to tape, okay.
So he then goes for the third time. Camera one, get back 15 feet. And I say, tape is rolling. What is your problem, oh great one? You mean you can't ad-lib? And prior to that, he said to me, no ad-libbing, kid.
Right.
But I had it up to here.
Yeah, you look like you're
I still blood. Was crazy. Yeah. So Freddie Silverman, the president of the company, comes down and goes, Tony, what are you doing? Are you crazy? Yeah. He said, Mr. Silverman, I can't take this. This is ridiculous. He hasn't apologized. He's directing the show. I can't take this. Please, just shut up.
Right.
Next scene. It's a scene in which we're supposed to hit each other on the head, and he hits me with a shot. Brian, that put me through the floor. I'm not kidding you. And my eyes went boom, 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 boom. Nancy Walker was on the show with us, and she gives him a shot, and his eyes go boom, 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 boom. Comes to the end of the show. I'm making the long story longer. Comes to the end of the show, and he goes to his buddy, give me a cigarette. Right in the middle of this, right in the middle of the show, I said, tape is rolling. Come on, no more smoking here. If we can't smoke, you can't smoke. Now, I got this guy crazy. Comes the very end of the show. I get a knock on my door. It's this guy that's with him. He says, Mr. Gleason would like to see you in the dressing room immediately. Show's over. I said, yes, sir. I walk in and I can hear Gleason mixing his drink. The ice is clinking.
Yeah.
And he goes, in a Gleason way, hey, pal. Sit down. Yes, sir, Mr. Gleason. Is that script belong to me? Do I take it home? Yes, sir, Mr. Gleason. What does it say in the first page? And I open it up and he goes, Dear Tony, I sincerely apologize. I was wrong. So sorry, Jackie.
Wow.
And it ended to the point where we got so close that he called me every single weekend and say things like, why are you wearing a black pair of pants with a silver zipper? What are you, crazy? You know, he was part of the show every week, so we ended up being friends.
It's awesome. So as you close out my last closing out this segment, as you close out this weekend, what do you want people to remember about you, the performer?
Well, Brian, is that I really gave everything I had for them, that I love them, that I'll miss them. I'm not leaving the business. I'm going to, you know, flex some muscles creatively. And
you're on WABC still, too?
On WABC, doing my radio show on Saturday nights, but at 10 o'clock, and I'm grateful for that. But I want to, you know, write a couple of screenplays. I want to write a play, a Broadway show. I've been always itching to write a novel. It's all part of something I want to do. So in my 80s, I'm going to focus on that energy and that. And to the people out there who are listening, listen, I started on 21st Street here in New York City on a rooftop. It was a dream. The journey has been unbelievable. The dream has come true. The dream continues on. And I just want to thank everybody listening to your show, and I know it's in the millions. Thank you so much for this journey that you've blessed me with.
And if you're there on the 22nd, he's going to run through the tape. Expect a great show. Don't worry about it. Tony Leno, it's been a privilege. Thanks so much for sharing some great moments.
God bless you, and thank you for everything you do.
You got it. Thank you, Tony. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Yeah, just wrapping up the hour. I'm going to be heading out right now to Richmond, Virginia, and it's going to be great. I'm going to do politics and pints there and have a great time with and meet some brand new listeners with our brand new station. Also, the next day, that'll be tomorrow, I'll be at McLean's Restaurant in the morning. I'll be broadcasting the show there from 9 a.m. Eastern time till noon. So come down. They don't take reservations, but it's at 3205 West Broad Street in Richmond. And then I'll do the radio show from Virginia tomorrow. So it's going to be great. And I look forward to seeing all of you guys in person. And amongst our guests tomorrow will be Governor Glenn Youngkin. So it'll be a lot of fun. And I hope to see everyone there. Also, April 27th, I want you to see everybody in beautiful Nevada. Go to Nevada, BrianKilmeade.com. It'll be liberty. It'll be history, liberty, and laughs. BrianKilmeade.com, VIP opportunities as well. Henderson, Nevada is the place just outside the Strip. We have fun on stage. We bring history to life big time. Thanks so much for listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Always in action. There's always breaking news. Always happy to give you perspective. And so glad you chose us. Keep it here.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.